Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and welcome to this discussion on Baltimore City education. This has been an interesting sojourn. I've been following this, not covering it in depth, but following it, the question of what happened between the Montessori School and Dallas Nicholas Elementary School in Greenmount West, which is a neighborhood that is right across the street from the school system headquarters. So we had these conversations early on. I talked to other people around the city when it came to the fore that some schools like Montessori, the Montessori School, which people who go there, teachers who work there, parents I've talked to love the school, say that Montessori education is a very powerful education system, and I don't disagree with that at all. And the critique was that it was if not a majority, then a plurality white school in a city that is majority black. And so many people wondered why that was. And there were a lot of reasons people posited for that. And one of the things that then happened was that some neighborhood people I became aware of were saying, look, how can you have this incredible charter school in our midst and our kids can't go there just by right to go there? And so that made a great deal of sense when people said that to me. And I got an email a little bit ago about this vote that was about to take place in the Baltimore City School Board around this particular issue about 20% of their student body or 30% should come from open doors from the community. So, and, you know, when you hear that initially, well, that makes a great deal of sense. Well, why not? I mean, these kids should be allowed to have a Montessori education like anybody else. But then I started hearing from people who in the community had a different point of view, saying that if that happened, the way the school system is structured and the way money is structured, the way Title I money goes to schools, which could be $9,000 per student, then that would be a drain on the students from the traditional school in the neighborhood called Dallas Nicholas Elementary School. And they would lose money, lose students, and then, as the system has been doing, the school could eventually close within a year or two because they'd say you don't have enough students and we have to close you. So it became a dilemma. And I really started wrestling with this and talking to different people about this, what was going on. And my thought was, which I'll posit here to our guest, which I'm about to introduce to you, is that this is emblematic to me of the issues the school system faces and the problems the school system has in figuring out the direction for our Baltimore City public schools. It is emblematic of that in terms of the debate around charter schools and the lawsuit from some charter schools to the countersuit from the Baltimore City public schools. And some people might say, well, how is that connected? It's deeply connected because it has to do with who gets money, who controls what, who has the influence to get money into those schools, who doesn't have money to get into those schools from outside sources, which has become part of, as my friend Dr. Lester Spence would call, the neoliberal agenda for cities that is turning things upside down in terms of funding. So this is a very deep issue. So I think it goes beyond that. And there was a vote last night in the city school board that let the Montessori school open its doors to 10% of the communities of students from that community, which was a compromise. But what did it really get us? So we're here in the studio with Dr. Ronnie Ellington, associate professor of mathematics education at Morgan State University, where she coordinates the graduate programs in mathematics and science education, and has also been one of our regular commentators here on our public education system. And Dr. Irma Johnson's in the studio, one of the people who wrote to me after we made the first commentaries about the Montessori school, saying, hey, there's another side to this. And she's adjunct faculty at the Johns Hopkins University School of Education and is a retired principal of the Dallas F. Nicholas Senior Elementary School in Greenmount West. Good to have you in the studio, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Good to meet you here. Allison Perkins-Cohn joins us by phone and executive director of the Department of New Initiatives for Baltimore City Public Schools. Allison, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I think Dale Hargrave, he's not here yet, but he's coming or calling soon, we understand, is the former president of the Greenmount West Community Association who supported the move around Montessori. So we just got a text that when we wrote to them saying, could one of you join us, that he is going to be joining us on by phone or coming in studio, but he should be here soon. And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. And now my introduction's over. Okay, so.
You said a lot, Mark.
I did say a lot. But I did say a lot, Ronnie, because I think that this is a much deeper issue than just the vote around, and though I'm not saying this is unimportant, but it's a much deeper issue than just the vote around Dallas, Nicholas, and Montessori.
It is. And I think we were talking in the green room about. I would love for you to share. You have to start with our guest. She has a.
All right, I'll slide from one doctor to the other.
Okay. As I was sharing,
welcome, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you. I shared that it is more than just a matter of choice. When you're talking about the struggle between the Montessori School and Dallas F. Nicholas Elementary School, about in 1994, there was what we call Facility Solution. That was a program that was developed by Baltimore City Public Schools to look at the feasibility of two schools in Greenmount West. Mm-hmm. They concluded that because of the number of students in that catchment area, two elementary schools could not exist in that area because there wasn't enough children to for enrollment of two elementary schools. So Mildred Monroe closed, and the children from Mildred Monroe joined Dallas F. Nicholas Elementary School. The Montessori School came into existence, I think, 9 years ago, and really recruited not so much in Greenmount West, but in other areas of the city.
Let me interrupt for a second, but I understand that Montessori, I mean, they have, you have to apply, and it's like a lottery.
That's right.
They don't, like, say, I'm going to take five from Handen and five from Roland Park and one from Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
Right, right.
But there are other charters who open, and I think this is what Montessori is trying to do, who opened, and in that catchment area, they took all of the children. So they took all of the children from that area. But because Dallas cannot exist, because two elementary schools cannot exist in that one area because there's not enough children, that's where we have the rift. I think, and I wrote with you, Mark, because I said it's more than choice, because the way that children are funded in Baltimore City Public Schools through Fair Student Funding, if you are a principal and you have less than 350 students, it's very, very difficult to program for those students. So with Montessori School saying that we want to take this many kids out of Dallas F. Nicholas, you're talking about funding. You're talking about funding. And to go from 323 students, which is currently the enrollment at Dallas F. Nicholas Elementary School, to take even six kids out of that school would be a nightmare for that principal. Six kids.
Because of funding.
Because of funding.
Because you get so much money per student.
That's right.
And Title I gives you $9,000+ per student, and you lose. That school would lose
well,
that money.
Well, it's not just Title I, okay? It's not just Title I. The way the Fair Student Funding is the model is created, if you have children who are performing above grade level, you get funding for those children. There's the base funding, then there's funding for children who are below grade level, and funding for children who are above grade level.
Okay.
So if you take $45,000 out of that school, you already have a small school. And a small school like that, the principal has to say to herself, where do I take this money? The money could come from another teacher, which means the class sizes will balloon, or the money could come from resources for PE, art, music. So you have a school who may have PE once a week, may have art and music once a week. So, yes, there's choice, but when you take funding from small schools, you're the point of equality and equity in education. That's the issue that we have.
So I'm glad you laid that out. And I didn't mean to interrupt. I just want to make sure we have enough, I guess, a voice in here in the time we have, the 40, 50 minutes we have here. I want to introduce also, coming in studio, is Dale Hargrave, former president of the Greenmount West Association. My sense is you supported the idea of students going to Montessori. Am I wrong or right?
Well, I think we need to give people background about the Montessori school. The Montessori school was first Mildred Monroe Elementary School, and it closed in the early 80s.
Right, right.
And most of the children in our neighborhood go to Dallas Nichols right now. What we were trying to do, because of No Child Left Behind, the Montessori school has to do a lottery. What we really wanted was a two-tier lottery system where the children in our 16-block catchment area would have first bite at the apple. That was what our concept was. What was done legislatively is totally different. And I can tell you that our intent is not to rob students from Dallas Nichols, because we got children in our neighborhood on both sides, and I'm very upset that we're at this juncture. I'm disappointed with the Board of Ed for not taking leadership to help us remedy this instead of pitting two schools against each other. And I think it was cowardly with this decision they made last night. Wasn't a fix.
Okay. And I agree with both of you. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a fix.
Right. No.
And Dallas Nichols is in the fix.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Very good. Yeah. Up there with Johnny Cochran on
so
that.
So nobody's happy.
Can I just get in here a minute?
Allison, go ahead, and then we'll turn over to you. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So this is Allison Perkins Cohen from City Schools. And, there was a lot of conversation last night about this idea of pitting schools against each other. And I do take exception to that idea.
Okay.
I don't think that's what's happening here. I think, the public school system has a responsibility to making sure that there are good options available to all of our students. And so in this case, you had one school who asked for a waiver that would have allowed them to give preference to students in a certain area. That area sat entirely on the zone of another school. As the school board has a responsibility to make sure that that other school, Dallas Nichols, knew that this request was pending, had a chance to provide comment on the implications for them, and that that everybody impacted by this decision has a chance to weigh in and think about how it impacts them. And the board needs to consider all of that. And the board, we do, so it is much more complex than choice. We are a school system that's embraced choice, and we have embraced charter schools. We have 34 charter schools in the district. And it's a question of how much that choice should be impacting single schools. If it has a disparate impact on a single school, then, that's where you really get into the tension of how much choice you can really offer within a small area that's going to disparately impact a single school. And I don't think that anybody was pitting schools against each other, but giving the information to all community members that are impacted so they could speak up and engage in the conversation in any way they saw fit.
So
that may not have been the absolute...
Go ahead, right quick. I just want to get over.
That may not have been what the board wanted to happen,
right.
But that is exactly what happened.
Right.
It did happen.
Yes.
It happened in terms of Dallas F. Nichols and Montessori saying, these are the children that we have to go after, especially Dallas M. If I want to survive, I need to keep these kids in my school, not only because of the funding, but also because of facility solution. If that school drops under a specific number, which is now at 84%, if it drops any further mm-hmm. because kids go to Montessori, mm-hmm. then the state is also looking at the usable rate in that building.
And I think this is what I was trying to pause earlier before we go to the phones here, is that there's such a complexity in all this to me.
Yes,
absolutely.
And part of the complexity, Ronnie, is that right, you have certain schools in our city, and I'm thinking of two schools that are really good schools. I'm not condemning these schools when I make this comment, but like Liberty School number 64 at Garrison Liberty Heights, or Highland High Elementary Middle, a charter school, a neighborhood charter school mm-hmm. on the east side of town.
Right.
They are doing incredible work, but the real reasons they're doing incredible work is because those principals, with the contacts they have, can raise tens of thousands of more dollars for their students from the private sector and philanthropic groups. People who run Dallas Nichols Elementary School, as another example, mm-hmm. not saying this is not a condemnation either, just dealing with reality, don't have those contacts. So they don't make another $10,000, $15,000, where that number might be, for their schools to upgrade their facilities, mm-hmm. put new gyms in, buy equipment that a place like Liberty School has. And God bless them. I went to Liberty School number 64 as a kid. It was my school. I love the school. I'm glad that it's getting what it's getting. But it creates this imbalance, as does this question of charters. Montessori, and I'm a fan of Montessori and Waldorf methods of teaching both. They're very different. I think they're incredibly important methods of teaching our children. But they have the ability to raise
That's
money
right.
from outside
That's
sources,
right.
A, because of the student body they have, and B, because of the contacts of people who are on the board of that charter school. That creates an inevitable inequity,
exactly.
It seems to me.
So it's what we
That's
were talking
problem,
about. Dr. Johnson and I were talking about this in the green room about, we throw out the word choice as if all choices are equal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we don't do is talk about, well, what makes this a better choice? People always say we want good choices of school. But why is it now that the charters become the good choices? So well, I think, well, yeah. this is something we have
let
to
let Ronnie finish. You can jump right in, Allison.
Right. So, so is it that it really is a better choice, or is it that it has the resources or the student demographics that people perceive it as being better? Mm-hmm. See, we got to talk right. about perception versus reality. So you have a predominantly African-American school that's a neighborhood school in an area where you have this kind of jitsy charter school.
That's being gentrified quickly.
Exactly. And now you say, well, this one's better, quote unquote, because of the demographics, because of the resources, because of this. So is it really a choice? And that's what I think you're trying to beg the question around, Mark, that right. not all choices are created equal, and Dallas cannot compete with that
that's
choice.
Right.
So
right.
if you're going to say
that's
it's right. a choice, then you need to give them the resources to actually
that's
competitively
right.
be a viable option so that the choices really are between two extraordinary schools as opposed to one that looks better because
right.
of its demographics and
right.
resources and one that's kind of the lesser option.
So,
it goes
and,
back
and
to
and I, Allison, go ahead, and then I'll come right back with you, Dr. Johnson.
And I agree with you. I mean, I think that that was why the board really struggled with this and Dr. Thornton really struggled with this is because you're right that there is an association in the public with the word charter.
Mm-hmm.
People think charter means better. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but the association is that if it's a charter, it's better. Similarly with Montessori, there's that's a kind of brand name, too, that people
right.
think that that's something that's desirable. And so that is what that is exactly what I think the board was concerned about is that you're that level. We want to have a variety of options for our students, but we do want to have a level the playing field so that it's a variety of options spread across the entire district, not an option that's just competing directly with a single school. That's
exactly.
a level of competition that's pretty hard for an individual school to compete with in a fair way.
Yes. Thank you.
And you wanted to say what, Dr. Johnson?
I just wanted to say again that it's all about equity. If you have and the equity that's in each one of the schools, certain schools can't be given this amount of funding and another school given less funding and then say you have a choice. There is no choice. There is no choice. I'm a parent. If I see a school that my child can go to where they can engage in the arts every day, they can engage in PE
yep.
every day.
Yep.
I'm going to make that choice.
No, exactly.
I'm going to make that choice.
Right.
Yep.
And that is right. If I let me turn to you, Mr. Hargrave. I mean, if I was a black working class man struggling with two jobs, living in Greenmount West, trying to keep things going, in a neighborhood that's changing, and I had elementary school children going, where am I going to put them? Am I going to put in Dallas Nicholas that doesn't have the resources?
Right.
I'm going to put him on that Montessori that has
that's
all the
right.
resources? What do you think I'm going to want to put my child?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, and I'm in agreement with just about everything everybody said, and I really believe that, you know, that we were all sold a bill of goods on this charter school as charter schools as
savior,
fix-all.
As savior.
I always believed that there was a problem with the public schools. Fix them. I'm a graduate of Baltimore City Public School, a proud graduate. A proud graduate of Baltimore City Public School. I got a great education. That's why I can articulate as clearly as I can right now. But in the manner of the schools, still, the Montessori School does have resources, but then they still should be held to the same account at all schools, period. I think that charter schools were supposed to do their own marketing and things to raise money, and I do not support one school benefiting at the expense of a number. You can't make a school that's a pauper and give the money to
right.
a prince school.
That's right.
That's taking the money from the rich and the poor and giving it to the rich.
Right.
I want to open the phones here, but Allison, you're about to say what, and then I can go to Ronnie and open the phones. Allison?
No, I think too. Oh God, I forgot my train of thought. Go ahead.
I think Allison was trying to say. What were you trying to say, Allison?
I wasn't particularly trying to jump in, but agree with the concept that we just need to make sure that that we need to make sure that all students have access to commensurate resources. I mean, that has been what the district has been trying to do with all of our schools. And you know, that's we were sued recently by the charter schools, and that's what we've been trying to do is to make sure that the way that we fund schools is commensurate across all of our schools because all of our students need access to high quality options. All of them need the kinds of supports and services that Dr. Johnson is referring to. And so that is our obligation as a school system is to make sure that we disperse the resources in a way that the supports go to all of our students so they can all be successful.
Well, they shouldn't be spending money on lawyers then.
And I agree. And if the school system had not been sued by the charters, then we would not be spending money on lawyers. So I agree. We don't want to be in a position. But when we have been sued, we have an obligation for all of our students to defend ourselves against that lawsuit, which does threaten the viability of the district and the resources for our traditional school students.
And I might posit here as well, and let me open the phones right after this, if you mind, folks, is that I think that both lawsuits are a problem. That we're facing right now, and that is also at the heart of the problem. I think the school system has to kind of make up its mind what direction we're going in and how we're going to get there. And I think that that you know, and the difference we should also say that charter schools in Baltimore are different than they are around the country.
Right. Yes, they are.
These are not privately run; these are public schools.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But they also have connections that allow them to float bonds like Itsy Neighbors, mm-hmm. which is an incredible school,
mm-hmm.
an incredible school.
Yes, it is.
When I visited that school, I was blown away by the participation of the students, walking into the lunchroom and realizing the students had designed the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. They built it the way the students wanted to live. I mean, it's a really good school.
Yes, it is.
But the power and resources to float a bond to build a school that they can pay back.
That's right.
Dallas Nicholas does not have the power float a bond to rebuild their school and pay it back.
That's right.
These are the problems we're facing, and that's the inequity I think we really have to be honest about
exactly.
and wrestle with. And this is not condemning any schools.
And also, too, they're in a school building that used to be a public school. See, also, we got to talk about
that used to be a traditional school.
Right. So
school.
Then, see, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. That they paid a dollar for. So, you know, those kinds of things need to be considered as well. And when you start talking about a place like Greenmount that is through that kind of pre-gentrification area, I'm from D.C., you know, I noticed how our schools were not funded. And then my school that I went to high school with got shut down. They're about to build condos in it because it is gentrified. So a lot of this has to do with, well, if we can take away from Dallas and then that school becomes vacant, like you said, it goes to a certain point, then we can justify closing it. Now you got property involved.
But I don't think it's a conscious thing.
I know. It's not right? conscious. I don't think it. Well, I'm not going to say what I think, but I do think.
No, I don't think it's conscious.
Well, I think that it's a part to play. I think people maybe not conscious, but you're right. If there's an equation for building usage that can then be impacted and then this building can be shut down to be used for other purposes, that's something we need to think about as well.
So let me open the phone so we'll come right back to all of our other guests here. 410-319-8888. Bill in Northeast Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, first of all, let me just say hello to everybody.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good morning.
And then in terms of what just said in terms of consciously, Mark, that was basically, you know, I've always been against charter schools because I always think charter schools as a pathway to privatization schools, which is a part of the gentrification process. Because, I mean, you know, I think what gets to me is this, that what's happening in Baltimore is not unique. All across urban America, we have the same kind of problem with charter schools versus public schools, capitalization, and regentrification. So, you know, I just think that the charter school movement just is a whole part of the process in terms of moving black people out of the city. And let me just close this, Mark, because I remember one time the argument used to be that we had too many children in a classroom. But then we were talking about, well, let's downsize the classroom. So then once you start talking about downsizing, then they say, well, we don't have enough children.
Right.
That was the part of the school. So I'm saying it's a bigger picture than what we want to sit here and talk about.
And Bill, I appreciate the call. And what I was trying to do in the course of this conversation, other ones I'd like to kind of get on this air in the next couple of months, is the bigger fish. And looking at the Montessori Dallas Nicholas issue through a larger lens about our entire school system, and not just about these two schools, and about all of the Greenmount West neighborhoods and their neighborhood schools across the city. So, I mean, that to me is – you were going to say what, Donald?
I was just going to say that, well, at least in our neighborhood, Greenmount West, we have taken some significant steps to deal with this so-called gentrification. We have a very extensive master plan, and, you know, we have dealt with vacant value. We've had some development, but a lot of our development is based on accommodating housing for regular folk. We don't have – a lot of folks coming in. Yeah, we have some houses selling at ridiculous prices, but if folks want to spend that kind of money for those houses, that's their choice.
But also, you also have those warehouses that people are buying, have apartments and art galleries in.
But they've been there for some time, and they're not at risk. Most of the people there, they're not wealthy. I mean, you know, and we have done some things
to
stabilize.
Some of my friends, I know they don't have a lot
of money. that income, but a lot of times those buildings are private property. And that you know, we got to deal with all that, Chico. But we're moving ahead.
So what I'd like to kind of explore here is what the future could be and should be here. I mean, I don't think I've ever set foot in Dallas Nicholas, nor have I set foot at the Montessori School. But so I don't know, and I've been looking at the test scores and that take place, mm-hmm. and Dallas Nicholas and Montessori scores are not that far off for most of the city schools. All of them not doing as well mm-hmm. as we would like for our students, I think. So I think that the question of charters is an important question. Now, because I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, when I was in this public school, Baltimore City Schools, and was an organizer for the AFT to bring them in as a union back then when I was at Mervo, that one of the things we wanted, we never got, was to let teachers run the school, which was our own form of charter idea without right. calling it a charter, was let us do the job and not have it, you know, be worrying from the outside. So the question is, this argument about people having choice in their schools and teachers having more say has been around for a while. So what is then the future of our school? What is the future?
Well, you brought up the test score argument, and I've been having this argument as a mathematician, as a person. First of all, numbers say what you build the assumptions on. Like, so we think numbers speak. They don't. They're built on certain assumptions. So there's this assumption that a higher test score means higher education, first of all. I just debunked that whole story because some of the most prestigious schools in this area don't have even test scores to look at. Your Gilmans, your Madonnas, they don't even, this is not even where they're playing in. So to imply that these test scores mean something about the quality of education, I just challenge. But that's another story. But the second piece I want to talk about is, okay, let's say that their test scores are the same. So Dallas and Montessori,
they're similar.
Yeah. But is that really what is having a parent choose a school? Right? Because like I said, your Gilman's, your McDonough, my girlfriend has her daughter at McDonough. They don't even think they have a test score. But you know what schools are better by the resources when you go to the campus. You're not looking at the test scores per se because you understand that the test scores only tell a sliver mm-hmm. of what's happening in that school. So I would even be willing to take my kid to a lower test score school that has gym, PE, arts enrichment programs, after school care that this school don't have. Right. The things that matter to me are the reasons I'm going to send my kid to school. So when we have this test score conversation, one, I don't believe that test scores measure the viability of a school. So that's a whole nother story. But even if they were equal, when we're making decisions about schools, we are looking at a holistic and comprehensive thing, not just a score.
So Allison, do you want to jump in here? Since you're not here, I'm going to call on you because I can't see your face. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. No, I agree that we need to find out more complex ways to evaluate schools. There's a lot of things that happen in schools that assess whether or not a family would want to choose a school and whether they're getting, you know, good quality out of their local school or their charter school. And so, you know, when we, as part of our renewal process for charter schools, we do look at a range of things. We do site visits at the school. We look at climate factors like suspensions and climate surveys. We look at, you know, financial management aspects. So there's a lot of aspects of a school that make a school good quality. I mean, some of our schools are offering good community school services. And so we have to get better at trying to look at the complexities of schools. Schools are complex places. They're trying to do a lot of different things. And we do have to get better at finding complex ways to evaluate them.
Let me just read this email real fast. It came in. It's interesting in terms of this discussion. Jody writes in that Midtown Academy in Bolton Hill is also an example of this tension and one that seems to have been resolved. Midtown is a charter, and its lottery pulls specifically first equally from Reservoir Hill and Bolton Hill. The school's mission was to integrate two historically racially distinct neighborhoods. Now, one could have worried about enrollment at Mount Royal, the neighborhood public school, but Midtown did not pull enough enrollment out of Mount Royal to ever put it in jeopardy. And now folks in those neighborhoods have a choice between Midtown and Mount Royal, both excellent schools. Pardon me. By the way, I am a Montessori parent and would be thrilled to see more students from Greenmount West join us. I'd love for us to be yet another school that serves the community. We at Montessori would love to be seen as more of a neighbor and part of the community. Also, full disclosure, my oldest child went to Midtown. So that is an example. I mean, I had a grandson who went to Midtown for a while. And it was a majority black school in Bolton Hill that was racially mixed, and it didn't have that effect. Mount Royal actually has become a really good elementary school that parents want their kids to go to. It's full of students all the time.
And it's a bigger population.
That's what I was going to say.
But how does that example fit into the debate we're having now?
Well, because it's a larger population. Yeah. It's a larger population. And also at Mount Royal was also a citywide program where kids could.
They have ingenuity.
They
have all of exactly. Those so they have. You can't.
That's
even
the difference. You can't make that comparison.
But Mark, I want to add that we considered all that, and I'm disappointed with the leadership at the Montessori school that we're even having this discussion, because that was the fix that we wanted when they first opened the doors. Now, they always use the fact that a lottery was mandatory. I understand the law.
Right.
We said, let's develop a two-tier lottery system where we have a catchment area where y'all can get that population out of our neighborhood, because we already had children going to Dallas Nichols because our school had been closed all that time.
The other one was closed. The other one's school was closed.
Mildred Monroe.
Right.
So anyway, that's what we wanted from the very beginning. So we shouldn't even be at this juncture right here if things had been done right when they first opened their doors.
Montessori is right that Midtown is different, so both for the reasons that Irma and Ronnie were saying in terms of scale, but also in terms of history. Midtown has been doing that for a long time. Mm-hmm. Midtown started as a new school initiative school prior to there being charters, and that was always their design. And so when they converted to charter, one of the conditions that they specified was that they didn't want to convert to charter unless they could maintain that preference. And so they were grandfathered in at the time. But under the charter law, until the amendments this year, the schools that had been created under the charter law, like Montessori, didn't really couldn't do it, and so they didn't have the authority until this year, and so that's why this is new territory for the school board is to be considering this, and we really have to think about a multitude of factors when we consider these kinds of requests, and one is scale, how many schools in the surrounding area are being impacted, and the utilization of those schools and the enrollment of those schools, and how significant the impact would be on those schools of the request.
So we have to take a quick news break. Mm-hmm. We'll come right back for like another 10 minutes or so, whatever that number is, to finish this conversation before our next segment. So Dr. Johnson, we'll come right back to you when we come back from this break. Hold that thought. And please join us here at 410-319-8888, and also write to us at talkasanashow.org, and let us know how we could better serve the community by creating these conversations in the community around the future of our schools. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are talking here in this first part of our second hour, continue our conversation about the controversy that surrounded the Dallas Nichols Senior Elementary and Montessori in terms of students, who would go to what school, and that was at the school board last night, and the question of money. Our guests here, Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Dr. Irma Johnson, who is a retired principal, by the way, from Dallas Nichols Senior Elementary, Allison Perkins-Cohn from the Baltimore City School System, Dale Hargrave from Green Mountain West Community Association, and you at 410-319-8888. So let me do this in a short time we have left. You were going to say what before we went to break, Dr. Johnson. Let me hit the phones and read this tweet.
I was going to say that the question that we had, you asked the question, how would we make schools great? How would we make schools great for every child? And I wanted to go back to my point about equality and making sure that every school was funded so that their parents have a choice. But the choice is an equitable choice, that within those schools, all the resources are there that will make sure that we're educating the whole child. We can't continue just to do math and literacy all day.
Amen.
We just can't continue to do that.
No,
that does not develop a whole child.
And I think that becomes the quality education conversation, because I hear people throw out the word choice and accountability as like twins. Oh, we want to give choice and we got to hold people accountable. But what you argue is it just about the accountability, which you're right. It's just the math scores and the reading scores. And then if you have a school that is under-resourced, they're going to spend their time trying to raise test scores because that's what they're accountable
that's
to.
Right. That's
so
right.
They're not even going to have the room or the headspace or the financial space right. to offer the enrichment
that's right.
so that they can compete. So this focus on accountability, to me, actually makes the schools less quality because you can't focus on the whole child because you don't have the resources mm-hmm. and what you're accountable to is reading scores and math scores.
That's true.
Let me read. It's a tweet here we got in from the great respected David Miller, who wrote in, "Why can't we fix the public schools, equal funding and resources across the district?"
That's what we're saying.
I agree.
That's what we're all saying.
And we had to define what we mean by equal funding.
Exactly.
Right, right, right.
That's right.
Let's look at all the numbers. Let's scrub the budget from top to bottom. Because like I said, Mark, I graduated from Baltimore Public School. I never had not had the benefit of art, music, none of that from the time
you
I
had
was
it,
in kindergarten till the time I graduated in 1975.
Right.
I don't understand it.
Right. And we always there was never a year I went to City Public Schools where I did not have art and music
I
and
went
instrument.
To a school with our teacher
but
had
if
a,
you
had
have,
a but, B3 on the third floor and they dragged it up the steps.
So if under fair student funding, because principals are given a lot of money,
mm-hmm. right.
if I have the choice between having a teacher in my classroom and a PE teacher,
what are you gonna
I'm
going
to have a teacher right.
exactly.
in my
and
classroom.
And it goes back to my accountability
that's
argument. That's
so,
what they're
so, so the question for the school system is, my girl, the phone's here, and it'd be interesting to have Allison to have the head of the schools on in a real discussion about this and others on the school board is, how do you get to a place where Dallas Nicholas Elementary School has a gym teacher, has the facilities, has art teachers, and the and the history teachers, and the teachers you need, as well as the
That's
literacy
right.
and math teachers. That's the question.
That's right.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Tisha. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Tisha.
Good morning.
Thanks for having this discussion. I've watched this this whole genesis with bringing in these privatized schools from the beginning, and I really feel like we were better off without them. That I'm looking at all the energy that's getting expended, talking about them, and they're taking students away and from our regular schools, and we've created a whole fight that wasn't there that we didn't need. I have to say, I wrote something down because I wanted to. I wanted to make a comment. I live in Northeast Baltimore, where apparently, you know, your favorite charter schools are, Mark. And it hasn't improved our lives. My assessment on my house, for example, has gone down. That is supposed to help property values and all that. My assessment our assessments have gone down a lot. And I don't see an improvement, in all the other schools. It seems like seems like it was a mistake. That's my comment. Thank you I'll listen to my answer.
No, thank you, Tisha. I think the reason we have the charter schools, Allison, very quickly, because we only have a few minutes left and want to get a couple more callers in, is we have charter schools because the schools themselves were failing. Not because for lots of other reasons, funding and many other things. I mean, that's one of the reasons charter schools came into the city.
Well, I think what charter schools are really providing is a range of different programming that's difficult for a school system to provide on its own. So our charter schools are providing some really interesting, great options that parents want. Like we have an immersion school that's providing international baccalaureate curriculum in 5 different languages. We have Montessori. We have Reggio Emilio programs. We have experiential learning programs. We have single gender programs. I mean, providing that range of programming for students is difficult for a school system to do on its own. And so it's helpful to have outside partners who have expertise in those areas to bring that into the school system. And so we value that. And I think that that's been a value to the school system.
And I think it is a value, but it also creates a tiered school system
exactly.
is the problem. And the question was, how do we get away from the tiered
that's
school system?
Right.
Those
that's
experts
correct.
Aren't really as expert as we think they are.
Well, no, some of them are. I mean, there are some really good people in these charter schools. I have mm-hmm. to say that.
I'm sure they are, but I mean, still, they're not the be-all and end-all.
And there are good people in the public schools, so the argument becomes nullified. But their hands are tied in ways that these new innovative programs are not. So to say that now we have these options, but then I tell you as a traditional public school, you don't because of the resources that you don't have, it's an unfair comparison.
Yes, it is.
And we don't want to talk about that because we just want to say, oh, these charters give us all these options. Well, why not invest that in the public school and let them give options?
Hear, hear.
So these are quick thoughts from our listeners before we end. Sue, you're on the air, but we have 30 seconds.
In regard to dismantling a tiered system and getting resources into the schools, I think the gentleman who said, let's scrub the budget from top to bottom, is absolutely right on. And there's a series of community forums coming up around the budget, but there's nothing on the website. There's no documents to look at. Individual principals are getting their budgets, but we don't, as a community, have the opportunity to understand how those decisions are being made. There's nothing publicly available.
Sue, thank you. And Allie, very quick final thought. 30 seconds.
Did you mean Allison?
Allison, yes, but 30 seconds. Allie was on the phone as a listener. Are you there, Allie? Okay, I don't know where Allie went to. So let me get a quick 30-second closing thoughts. I mean, literally quick thoughts, so we have another segment to go to. Why don't you start, Alice, and then we'll go around the room.
I mean, these are really important and complex issues. I think what you're seeing in terms of a lot of the challenges in our schools in terms of providing quality programming is that we don't have enough resources for any of our schools. Our buildings aren't in the condition we want them to be. The programming that we are offering our kids is not what we want it to be. I think what we really need to be doing is working together to figure out how to grow the pie so there's more resources for all of our kids so that it can all be successful. And I think that's one of the real stresses why you see this tension really cropping up now because the kind of budget season we're having.
Very quickly, Dale Hargreaves, but real quick.
I just really thought, that's what the Thornton Amendment was supposed to do.
And that was never an unfunded mandate.
And then it goes back to even the governor in a state of having surplus still is saying, oh, we're not going to give Baltimore City. So we talked about this last time that now there's a surplus for the state budget, but the unwillingness to give money to Baltimore City for whatever budget reason or equation, which is also an interesting and compelling piece of all of this.
Too many certain kind of dinners. Dr. Johnson, final thought.
My final thought is that it takes more money to educate poor children.
Yep.
It takes more money to do that. So it is our charge to make sure that schools like Dallas F. Nicholas Elementary has all the funding that it needs so that it can educate the children in that community.
And to me, that is the bottom line definition of the word reparations. Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Dr. Emma Johnson, Allison Perkins-Cohn, Dale Hargreaves, thank the four of you so much for this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you. We will continue. We can take a short break, and when we come back from that break, we have another segment coming right up, and we will be talking with Terry Baum. Is that right? Which paper is which? We'll be right back.